Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 18. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kuntu Vacha. Namasye purusham tvayam ishvaram prakrite param lakshyam sarvabhutanam antir bahir avastitam. Srimati Kunti said, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are invisible. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. Purport, Srimati Kunti Devi was quite aware that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, although he was playing the part of her nephew. Such an enlightened lady could not commit a mistake by offering obeisances unto her nephew. Therefore, she addressed him as the original Purusha beyond the material cosmos. Although all living entities are also transcendental, they are neither original nor infallible. The living entities are apt to fall down under the clutches of material nature, but the Lord is never like that. I'm going to read the whole purport today. Om Jnana Timaram Asya Jnanam Jana Sarakaya Sudan Militam Yena Tismai Shri Gurave Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadhamayam Tadati Sapadhantikam Adadana Spinam Dante Idam Yache Puna Puna Shrima Dupa Padam Bhoja Ulisham Janda Jandani Paragya Bhakti Shantayatnai Apayamam manabhitsanandam kupambhuriya paraduko dhugi sanatana sam prabhumatriyami sancha kalpa tarubhyasya kripa sindhu bhayedhacha titanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namonha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Abu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha, Shri Vasadi Ghor Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from New Jersey. We did a very nice program yesterday at the home of Bharati and Govardhan. They're regular members of the Sangha. And then today I'll go up to Albany. Very nice devotees there. And they're renting a hall for their Janmashtami program. And they cooked 108 preparations, and it's very nice, and they invite people from the university and then back to New York for Tuesday, where at the Ashtanga Yoga Center in Soho in Manhattan, they're installing Radha Krishna deities. So we're up to a nice section in the Bhagavatam. The history of the Bhagavatam, this first canto, and we studied the first part of that history, which is Vyasadeva. The whole first canto is inspired by basically the questions the sages of Namasharanya in response to Sita Goswami's revealing to them that he's going to explain the Bhagavatam to them and answer to their questions. If the universe is like a great hub, the center of that hub is Naimisharanya, and it's a special holy place where each holy place has a different effect, a different flavor, a different taste. In this particular holy place, it's very powerful to counteract the influence of the environment of the nature of Kali Yuga, and the sages are meeting there. They ask questions. And basically, the answer to the question, Sutta Goswami, at least the answer to the last question, now that Krishna has left the planet with knowledge and religion, where will that be found? And the answer was, it was the Bhagavatam. And Sutta explained to them that I not only heard it, I was sitting there when it was spoken, I heard, and I was there when it was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Prickett. I was there, I heard it, and I realized it. And the fact that he realized it, that he wasn't just understanding truth, he was actually seeing truth. And when you see truth, you can communicate that truth, because you can gear it to the frame of reference of your audience, which takes a little alteration of the way in which perhaps you heard the message from your teacher, because you had a particular frame of reference. Your teacher may have explained in a particular way, but the frame of reference of your audience may be different, and you have to make... So that alteration of the form without losing the principal content takes a depth of understanding. And when we learn spiritual truths, we just don't want to hear, as Prabhupada said, from armchair philosophers. We want to hear from people who have applied that truth within their lives and therefore can see it and realize it. This is actually our goal, to get such connections. And they were enthusiastic, and evidently they perhaps had heard something about this and wanted more details, and therefore they asked about Vyasadeva, they asked about Sukadeva, they asked about Maharaj Prickett. And this section is an answer to telling us about Maharaj Prickett, and if they wanted to know about his extraordinary birth, his extraordinary life, his extraordinary passing. So they begin with the birth, and that brings us right to the end of the Battle of Kurukshetra. And I don't want to go over the whole story again, but it brings us into a very wonderful realm. It's the end of the battlefield of Maharaj Prickett's birth. Means he was first Krishna is introduced, the first time you see Krishna. And this is also leading up to the birth of Maharaj Prickett, because it has to do with the son of Dronacharya, Ashvatthama. So you get the end, you get a little bit about this Ashvatthama and what happens. And the story begins where Ashvatthama, somehow or other, again, a very interesting point, that it's a person with position without culture. That's so dangerous, because position gives you power, and the power is meant to serve. But if you don't have the proper culture, proper understanding, then that power will be used to exploit. Or it may not be used to exploit intentionally, but you don't have the cultural frame of reference, the understanding and realization to use that power without abusing it or misusing it or harming others. So somehow or other, he thinks in this war that, you know, it's typical egoistic consciousness of inconsideration to a very high degree, And he somehow thinks, and not having the, okay, it's the war, we have to win. And he kills the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. And Arjuna, of course, that's his wife. Arjuna just takes off. We can, and Ashwatthama is just fleeing because this is Arjuna, the great warrior. And then when his horse fatigues and he sees he's about to be captured and killed, he releases the Brahmastra weapon. But he doesn't have the culture to counteract it. And then we see Krishna coming to his help. It's not only that. When he's chasing him, it's Krishna that's driving the chariot. So then we see Krishna. And we see Krishna how we see him in the wonderful role of serving his devotees. And although it's a subordinate position, it's the most exalted position because it indicates the exalted nature of the heart, one reciprocating in love. I always think one story of Srila Prabhupada when his holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj was serving him, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I believe, got a hernia or something, and Prabhupada was on his walk. And then while Prabhupada was on his walk, he took a detour to check how Tamal Krishna Maharaj was doing. So we think of Prabhupada in that position, not just a world acharya, but someone who is reciprocating the love of those who are even subordinate to him in a mood of service. Although these positions may be, in one sense, a person steps off of his seat. It's so glorious. So we get a glimpse of Krishna. In fact, I want to get into the subject matter today, but just as kind of a review, in your mind, if it was a class and I was before you and we didn't have to do this muting and unmuting of the phones, maybe I would, if you can all now try to remember the ways in which we see Krishna at the Kila Rasa Mrita Murti, a person who is embodied with the living reciprocation, the reciprocation of love by serving his devotees. If you can think of the things we discussed, and maybe as I mention them, then they'll come to mind. Well, the first, I guess I mentioned, I'm just going to mention, he's on the chariot. Wonderful. You can envision that. Just don't envision Krishna sitting below Arjuna holding, you know, driving that chariot. Envision the heart of Krishna. Envision the mind of God. He's doing that with pleasure. He's doing it with love. And this is the inner nature of the Supreme Lord that becomes revealed to his devotee. It is the most exalted perception of the Supreme Absolute Reality. And then, at the end of the war, you know, so many people are killed. We see him with the grieving families, and he tries to pacify them by philosophy again. Just don't see the external. See the heart of Krishna. Because if you're going to surrender to Krishna, what will attract you most is his heart. That you can actually have a relationship with God that is intimate. And then I'm jumping around. Maybe another thing you resolve is then he tests Arjuna by saying that we should kill Pratama, the son of Dronacharya. He's testing his devotee. Just see, he's trying to strengthen the devotee's understanding. Krishna is the supreme teacher, and his mercy comes in form of his instructions and knowledge. And then, actually, if you remember, when Arjuna sees this Brahmastra weapon coming, the first thing we see Krishna doing is not teaching, actually, but giving just practical advice, counteract this. So in all these various ways, we see Krishna more. In fact, I took a note. I kind of skipped ahead of one thing. Last class, we had a... We had a question. And Ek Chakra brought up the question. And I found the answer in the Bhagavatam itself. And the question that Ek Chakra asked was... You see, in this story, one of the ways in which Krishna is glorified is when Ashwatthama releases the Brahmastra weapon the second time. Just kind of, he's caught, and then Krishna resolves the dispute. Well, you have to kill him and not kill him. You can't kill him because he's the son of your teacher, and you have to kill him because he's an aggressor. And then Krishna resolves it. Well, you just cut off the top knot on his head, and that had some special, the jewel on his head, his hair, that had some special power. He was insulted. So one has been honored. This honor is worse than death. So you've killed him, and you've not killed him. And then we see, in this chapter is going to begin, he tries to get revenge, Ashwatthama. He tries to get revenge by directing the Brahmastra towards the womb of Uttara, because the others, the sons, were killed. Draupadi's sons were killed, but now this is the son of the son. So all the sons of Draupadi were killed. That meant that the Amoghavirya, the seminal succession from the Pandavas and the Kuru dynasty, was going to be finished. And Krishna needs his devotees to rule the world. So this is the son of one of the sons of Draupadi that was killed and fathered by Arjuna, which is Ashwatthama, and the Brahmastra weapon. And Krishna vowed, he took his firm vow, I will not take up the weapon. And then when he sees this happen, he accepts a Sudarshan at Duck Chakra. He's known as Bhakta Vatsala. He'd rather be known as the lover of his devotees than a worldly moralist. So then, Ek Chakra brought up the point, well, then why didn't Krishna's father, although he made that promise, why didn't he break that promise for a higher sense of morality? He may be, be known as the protector of his sons rather than a worldly moralist, that he just gave his vow to Kamsa, I will not, yeah, please, don't kill my wife, don't worry. It's not she who's going to kill you, it's the child in her womb. I'll give you the child. And Kamsa agreed. Someone brought up the point, well, he was in prison and had no choice, but then when I researched it, he was not in prison yet. He was only imprisoned after the first child. So he wasn't even in prison. He could have scooted out of town. Why didn't he hide like all the other wives of Vasudeva? He hid his other wives in different places to protect him. He could have hid his wife, could have saved his children. So why this glorification? There's nothing too difficult for a man of character in the discharge of his duty. How are we going to explain this to other people? It seems that there must certainly be levels of truth, different shastras, and certainly your word in that circumstance. In fact, there's some place else, I forgot where it states that, if the result is not good, then you don't really have to keep the word or something. I don't want to get into that now. So I looked it up because I once taught this, actually. And here is the verse. It says, Vasudeva was very much disturbed by the fear, it says, of becoming a liar, breaking his promise. Thus, with great pain, he delivered his firstborn son, named Kirtiman, into the hands of Kamsa. So there was definitely some concern there. And it did say, Kritrena, with great pain. Andrikat, Ativibala, he was very much disturbed. By what? By fear of becoming a liar, breaking his promise. It should have been he was much, you know, disturbed by handing over his child. So, in the next purport, it explains how Kamsa, and it gives different reasons why Kamsa, why Vasudeva could offer his son to cruel Kamsa. And then it gives four things. What is painful for a saintly person who strictly adhered to the truth? How could there not be independence for pure devotees who know the Supreme Lord? As the substance, what deeds are forbidden for persons of the lowest character? And what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna, for those who have fully surrendered at his lotus feet? Very interesting. What is painful? Well, so there's some sense of that, but the last point is, and what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who have fully surrendered to his lotus feet? That's the point. That he was giving up the child for the sake of Lord Krishna, and Prabhupada explains that in the purport, and I'm going to read that. Since the eighth son of Devaki was the Kamsa, one may ask what the need was for Vasudeva to deliver the firstborn child. The answer is that Vasudeva promised Kamsa that he would deliver all the children born of Devaki. There's going to be an answer that supersedes that. Kamsa, being an asura, did not believe that the eighth child would kill him. He took it for granted that he might be killed by any of the children. So did Vasudeva think that Kamsa would not kill him? No. What deeds are forbidden for the lowest guy? He can kill his kid. Vasudeva, therefore, to save Devaki, promised to give Kamsa every child, whether male or female. From another point of view, Vasudeva and Devaki were very pleased when they understood that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, would come as their eighth son. Vasudeva, the pure devotee of the Lord, was eager to see the Lord appear as his child from the eighth pregnancy of Devaki. Therefore, he wanted to deliver all the children quickly so that the eighth turn would come and Krishna would appear. He begot one every year so that Krishna's turn to appear would come as soon as possible. So, somehow or other, it had to do with the appearance of Krishna. And therefore, the last one, and what cannot be given up for the sake of Lord Krishna by those who fully surrendered unto his lotus feet? Now, this type of dynamic happens all through the first canto. This kind of a higher view by spiritual personalities, understanding their service, their main service is the advent of Krishna. And it's the same thing happened with the Akashvani, which was the demigods. They also look, they're the ones that caused the whole thing of his wife to be killed. That was the demigods, because they said the son will kill you. And there was some intention or purpose there with Krishna's birth, and also Narada Muni. Because after Vasudeva gives the child, then Kamsa's just so impressed. He saw, situated in truthfulness, completely equipoised, happy. And therefore, Kamsa said, "Oh, Vasudeva, you may take your child back at home. I have no fear of your first child. It is the eighth child of you and Devaki I'm concerned with. And but then Narada Muni came and said, no, anybody can get you. So Narada Muni was also in that mood. And in that regard, there's also some commentary about Ashwatthama. How, you know, how did he have the power again after he was, the first time Ashwatthama was insulted, then he goes out and he does the same thing again. I don't know if I can find it in the book right now, but there's also some point that behind everything, there's also the sense of Leela. Ashwatthama, in his next life, even became one of the seven great sages. So people who participate in Krishna's Leela, there's a little element that they also serve the Leela. They serve the Leela. And somehow or other, both points there are made in the Leela. What cannot be sacrificed for Lord Krishna, even your son. I guess it's kind of a modern type of joke. And the same sense, what is painful for saintly persons, also, he also is pained by that too. Ultimately, I mean, we could also say that even if it was painful to lie, maybe he would have done it if it wasn't for the fact that this was somehow in the Leela an expedition for the advent of Krishna, and that was Vasudeva's main relationship with Krishna, that he was Vishuddha Sattvam, Vasudeva Shambhitam, that he is the consciousness, he is the person with the consciousness by which God can appear. Okay, I don't mind even leaving that up to a little discussion now. Anybody have a question on that?
Maharaj?
Yeah.
It's Mahamuni. Please accept my humble obeisances.
Welcome back from being in a place where there's absolutely no phone reception. I empathize to you being in a great museum in Princeton. If anybody went to that house, it's certainly an amazing phenomenon. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
First of all, I apologize. I'm cooking something as we speak, so I hope it's not making too much noise. If it is, I can go to another room.
No, I mean,
I'll just go back and forth. But I don't totally understand, Maharaj. Sometimes it seems like when we read stories from the Shastra, we should take a lesson from it. And in this case, it seems like on one hand we're learning the lesson is that you should keep your word in all instances, but on the other hand that doesn't seem entirely reasonable, and we're told that the real reason is that you should do whatever it takes to help Krishna manifest. So the first thing about keeping your word in all instances, my understanding now, having heard what you just said, is that that's just strictly speaking not true. There may be times when it's best not to keep your word for a more important principle. Is that correct?
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes, it's true.
Okay. So in this case, then, really, we're not learning the lesson from Vasudeva that we should keep our word in all instances. That's not the lesson we should learn here, then.
Well, I think it is, because it says that it was extremely painful to him. Right? It said that it was extremely painful to him. I got to find that here. It said that it was he was disturbed. He was fear that he may have to break his promise. So obviously it was in his mind. Well, I may have to break my promise. He was very much disturbed that I may have to break my promise. And but then I guess he had some other idea, too, that maybe this can serve Krishna in a way or something. But I think he was, I think the fact that he was concerned about it and that he actually handed the child over, I don't know if he was relieved that he didn't have to break his promise.
Well, that's what I'm worried about a little bit, Marge, because there's famous cases where if the Nazis come and knock on your door and you're hiding a family of Jews in your attic, to my mind, and most people think, well, the hell with your frustration that you have to lie, there's a more important principle, which is saving these people. So
right. Obviously, I think that's what it says. There is a more important principle. Oh, let me just look at it again. I see your point.
I'm only asking you what exactly it is we should take from this, because it seems that there's many lessons that could be learned, and some of them...
I have a feeling also that... it's an interesting point. It's going to come up also, too. I wrote that article in my book, Greetings from Vrindavan, and, about are women less intelligent, and then there was this whole analysis. And someone sent me a very, very good article by Bhaktivinod Thakur, right, where he discusses relative truth and absolute truth,
mm-hmm.
And that you actually have to discern, even when the spiritual master is, And it appears that Shastra, and this is, I think, the difficulty, that Shastra is times, it's communicating at particular times, And it communicates sometimes, it communicates sometimes through the conceptions and understandings of the day, right? Like, for example, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when it says that Lord Chaitanya had 3.5 most confidential associates, right?
Yeah.
And the half was a woman, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Now, at the time that he spoke, in the particular culture he spoke, that probably didn't disturb people at all.
Well, the other
because women were in a subordinate position, et cetera, that. But I wouldn't communicate in that way at all. It wouldn't even be necessary. And today, you could say Prabhupada had 4 most confidential associates, and then you could name them. They could be 3 women, 3 men, and 1 woman. You wouldn't have to say that.
Yeah.
That particular aspect would be a relative truth, and it's not what you have. So I think, when we're trying to read Shastra, you know what I'm saying? And then, it's not just 5,000 years ago, Prabhupada was also, to a certain extent, using the language of his day also, although he was quite expert in communicating. But obviously, there's a few things that are a little more difficult to understand. And I think there's some element of that, and you have to be very, very careful in doing that. Yeah. What are you going to say, Mamuni?
No, just as an aside.
What?
I always thought that she was half of an associate because as a woman he couldn't directly associate with her, not that she was considered half a human being. I'm not sure what, as an
what?
Aside.
I've actually read that also. It's not a half a human being, but yeah.
Okay, but I understand what you're saying, Marge, and I appreciate it.
Half in terms of confidentiality. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think someone would say that in the present age.
Yeah, even that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Okay, so thank you then. I guess what you're saying is that we do have to be mindful that the Shastra communicates on many levels, and sometimes it may be communicating a relative truth, which still may have application, but we have to understand the context in which it is said.
I'm saying here, honestly speaking, if I have to be honest here, it doesn't seem to here, be perfectly resolved two different things that are said in one sense. You know what I'm saying? Because it gives an indication that in terms of this promise, right? It was a really big thing to him, right? And then you're questioning, well, why would it just be such a big thing to him? You know what I'm saying? It's obvious. And you gave the example of Nazis breaking on the door, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So, okay. So then, you know, the reconciliation was, okay, the reconciliation was, okay, that he was, at least here, and the purport is mentioned, this is Prabhupada's purport, the reconciliation was, there's some idea of expediting the advent of Krishna. But then the question is, I think you raised, but still then why was he fearful of doing it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, then still why was he fearful of doing it? Why should he be fearful of doing it? Okay, but there is a point, you know, at least, you know, I guess the point still has to be made, et cetera, is that, you know, there was dharma and adherence to a word, and that was a principle of truth, and it bothered people to lie.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we can't identify it with it so much, you know, but it really bothered him to lie, even to something like that, you know, and maybe it, you know, and it wasn't just like that. Like, let's say, you know, someone comes to the door and they, you know, they ask you, okay, you know, where are the women and children? They're not here. You know, it was a little bit stronger than that. He was facing, right?
Yeah.
You know, he was facing person, right? And said, I will do this, you know? So it's a little bit stronger than that, too, you know? You know, I don't think it's an exact analogy, too, with the Nazi. There's obviously some elements there that you can transcend to a higher degree. But it was a little bit stronger still. He went to a person, he gave his word. I think it's strong. I will do this. It's right in the person's face. It's not like an incidental thing. It's a promise. I agree to you. And I think it's strong. It's strong in people's hearts of culture. That's a principle they don't like to give up. And you know, obviously he was a kind of a Kshatriya. And, you know, this honor, this word, you know, it was a tremendous thing for him. So I think that there's some elements of both, even though, and I think in terms of Shastra, the truth of Shastra, really, I guess we don't want to get in there, it's its relationship to God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, even, you know, even, you know, even historical facts, sometimes they you know, in I saw Jiva Goswami say that the, you know, sometimes when they list the kings and the dynasty, you know, they don't go into great historical research, you know what I'm saying, to get all the dates exactly right, because that wasn't the point of listing the kings. The point of listing the kings was their, because in all Puranas, the kings are listed, and the reason the kings are listed, because the Puranas are to give moksha, they're to give liberation, and one of the greatest impediments for liberation is material aspiration. So the Shastras have to show that the people who've achieved the highest level of material success are still subjected to birth, death, disease, and old age. So they list the kings in their histories, because their histories are basically the same as everyone else, you know, in terms of not being able to solve the most important problems of life. So, this really gets into, I guess, what they call hermeneutics, the science of analyzing the Shastra. But anything else, Mahamuni? Because I like this contribution.
I appreciate what you said. I mean, about, in some ways, what struck me when you were explaining Vasudeva's fear of lying is that maybe my lack of concern might say more about my culture than his.
No, there's also this philosophical point. But, it's, wow, you know.
I appreciate it.
You know, people like, you know, Yudhisthira, the whole thing. Okay, now we'll go on to we do have, and definitely today, I have about 15 minutes. there's not a day I can go too long because I have a 3.5 hour drive to get to the program. But anyway, Krishna saves he's prepared to leave Krishna. And that itself is an amazing phenomenon. I really, if you get into, you know, not just the Leela of the pastimes, but to actually see the Leela of the pastimes, what you actually have to see also is the people's hearts. And that's remembering Krishna also, how Krishna is feeling, how the devotees are feeling. Because how Krishna is feeling is what's going to attract us to him. And what the devotees are feeling is what we were aspiring for, to have that kind of love for Krishna, for God, ultimately for reality or truth. And that lack of love is what's actually separating us from the truth. Because love is a desire. When you love God, you are with God. There's no physical separation. It's a separation of consciousness. Because God is Advayam Gyan. He's consciousness, which is pervading everything. And therefore, Uddhava's message to the gopis, Uddhava's the message of Krishna to the gopis. I am there in my Baba manifestation. In your devotion, I am there. So we're separated by that, and we see that. Anyway, Ashwatthama, he throws the Brahmastra. The Pandavas take up their weapons. Krishna takes up a weapon. He's Ananya Gati Twam. He really responds to those who take shelter because he's a person, and the glory of the person is his reciprocation in love. And reciprocation in love means to become subordinate out of love, out of your own desire, to become subordinate to the desires and wills of another. That's what service means. And Krishna is serving his devotees. And Krishna in the heart, he's Yogeshwar, he protects the embryo inside. And then Sita Goswami is describing this, and he's saying, this weapon, he describes that this weapon is irresistible, this Brahmastra weapon, it's Brahma Tejo, but it's counteracted because Krishna is more powerful. This is an energy of Krishna. And Shaktiman, the possessor of energy, is always superior to the energy. And it's not wonderful. Because Krishna maintains and creates. So this is also the beautiful part of the first canto. You see, if you don't understand enough about Krishna's love and relationship, if you just hear Krishna's position and don't hear his personality, then it can become somewhat dry. But before you actually have a fully developed relationship with Krishna, if you just hear about that relationship and not his position, you'll tend to sentimentally equate Krishna with you. In other words, you'll have a sentimental approach to Krishna. So it's always very nice in this first canto especially, you're getting the wonderful reciprocation of Krishna, which in one sense it looks like things we could do. We could, drive our son to work or something, you know, even though we're the father. I mean, we can serve the subordinate, you know. Any of my disciples want to get in the car, I can drive you around, no problem. We can assuage the grief of people who are in distress. So we can do all these things. So in that sense, if you don't understand Krishna's position, you can think, well, anyway, he's just like me. So it's always nice that they always, you know, Sutta, and you'll even see the prayers of Kunti, they always present Krishna's position. So that we don't take him cheaply. The Aishwarya, I read this someplace, it's kind of like a pot in which the Madhurya could be kept. you have to have some conception of his greatness, even in terms of lila or pastime. And that may be superseded by the sweetness of the relationship. But there has to be some conception of the wonder and greatness and exalted nature of God in Krishna. Even in Krishna lila, that's there too. So Siddha said, it's not wonderful. This Krishna is maintaining, controlling the whole universe, just as a sun dries up a drop of dew. Urjan actually put that in. And then he's about to leave again. Rome is there to today's verse. I'm going to go, I've got to find which book I'm at. And then he says, the saved from the radiation of the Rasa Kunti, the chaste devotee of the Lord, and her five sons and Draupadi address Krishna as starting for home. Kunti is Sati. She's devoted and chaste. I want to read that purport. It's nice just for Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja is coming up, and I think we should appreciate more and more the purports that he's given. And I'm really finding myself more and more appreciating hopefully my understanding of the philosophy is deepening, then I'm able to see more in Prabhupada's simple words how he's expressing and penetrating the very depth of the philosophy, but in a way that's accessible to everyone, and that's the glory of Prabhupada's realization. Purport, Kunti is described herein as Sati or chaste due to her unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna. Her mind will now be expressed in the following prayers for Lord Krishna. This is what we want, her mind. A chaste devotee of the Lord does not look to others, namely any living being or demigod, even for deliverance from danger. So this is actually an expression of love, that you are my maintainer. It's a feeling of love and the reciprocation to one who's giving you shelter and mercy. That all along was the characteristic of the whole family of the Pandavas, shelter of Krishna. They knew nothing except Krishna, and therefore the Lord was always ready to help them in all respects and in all circumstances. Beautiful sentence by Prabhupada. Next. That is the transcendental nature of the Lord. He reciprocates the dependence of the devotee. This is really something we can meditate on ourselves. Do we have that faith that Krishna will reciprocate our dependence? And isn't it practically all day long we have choices to do what's right or to do what we think pleases us? And doing what's right is depending on Krishna. And do we have faith in that? That by doing what's right, it will lead to auspiciousness. It will lead to the protection, shelter of God. Well, God is protecting us. He reciprocates the dependence. We have these choices all along, every moment. As our cravings come from our heart, and we try to fulfill our cravings, meaning that we have faith in our cravings. And so many times, if you're really honest, how many cravings come for you that you immediately satisfy? They may not go beyond the regulative principles in one way, but how many cravings do we satisfy that are not really what Krishna wants, not really even our prescribed sense gratification, so to speak? How many cravings come out of our hearts? And how much? And do we have faith in that? Yes, this will get our happiness? Or do we have faith that surrendering to Krishna will give us happiness? So these devotees had full faith, sati, chaste. One should not, therefore, look for help from perfect living beings or demigods, but one should look for all help from Lord Krishna, who is competent to save his devotees. Such a chaste devotee never asks the Lord for help, but the Lord, out of his own accord, is always anxious to receive it. We still have 10 more minutes, so let me go over some of Kunti's prayers. Srimati Kunti said, Namasye Purusham Tvajyam Ishvaram Prakrate Param Alakshyam Sarva Bhutanam Antir Bahir Avastitam. O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. So Kunti's paying obeisances, and Prabhupada in the purport says, normally this would be a very strange thing for such a lady. She should not commit that mistake, right? It cannot commit that mistake. And we see, you know, what is culture? Culture means that you have the samskaras to know how to learn, communicate, and relate. A cultured person knows how to relate. And a cultured person, I always get amused when I even try to pronounce the word. But anyway, a cultured person, the aunt offers obeisances to the nephew. And we described this before, but now it's going to explain, it explains why. Well, why does she do it? And she says, I'm offering my obeisances because Purusham Tvadyam, you're the original person. You're the original person. And why the original person? Prakriti Param. You're beyond Prakriti. You're beyond this material cosmos. The chapter Shloki Bhagavatam, that first verse mentions, you know, that Krishna said, it is I who exist before, I exist during, I exist after. Krishna is the original. And he's Ishvara, and he's special among, you're special, you're Ishvara. Prabhupada quotes a very famous verse, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanya Chaitanam. There's one God and then everyone else is a unique position, and this is you, Krishna. If I'm paying my obeisances, and it's very interesting, it's there's a contradiction here. You're existing within. You came into the womb of Uttara. You're existing without. You took up your Sudarshan, but you're invisible to all. You're not understood. How can you understand this? I gave you know. What is that verse the Isha Upanishads? What is that? Oh, he's within and without. He's inside and outside. I used to know this verse, but this is the very nature, is inconceivable nature, because it's beyond matter. It's inconceivable. Our experience is how things work under the laws of nature. And how things work under the law of nature, you're either within or you're without. You're either far or near. I can't help but tell that story again when I got lost over the Queens, one bridge in New York about 10 years ago when I first started driving a car. By the way, that car was given to me by Amitananda, who started this phone conference. But I went to that New York City traffic man. I go to last week, right? I know the guy at the booth, and I said, "Dear sir, I think I'm lost." And he looked at me and he said, "You're either lost or you're not lost." So that's typical logic. You're either lost, you're existing within, you're existing without. It's one or the other. So even though in one sense, we're seeing you everywhere. You're invisible because who are you? Who are you? Puzzled. Is he Krishna? Is all pervasive or localized? In fact, he is both. and he reserves the right of not being exposed to persons who are not surrendered souls. In other words, Krishna is a person and he reveals himself out of love. And when you don't love Krishna and you don't want God, which is a real problem, because technically speaking, all that exists is God. It's either God's or God's energies. So when you do not want God, because you don't want to surrender to your position as his servant, because that's who we are, then you come under the illusory potency, which is the only thing that could fulfill that desire for there not to be God. And then the next verse explains, well, okay, so she says, you are invisible to all. So then the question is, how, why are you invisible to all? And then she explains, Maya Javani Kapshanam Agyadopshajam Avyayam Lakshe Mudha Drisha Vato Natya Naro Yata. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtains of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. So this is a very nice thing, how someone can be there and invisible at the same time. So, although Krishna, you're within and without, but you're invisible, because who are you? It's like the actor on the stage, they're there, but the person is not revealing himself. So even when Krishna was there, Prabhupada's going to mention that in one of the purports. I mean, you know, even when Krishna was on the planet, Naham Prakasya Sarva Yoga Maya Samavrita, he was still covered. Even though he was there, people could not see him as Krishna. They could not see him as a person. And that's a fact. Ichidvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohena Bharata. That if you have material desire and envy, then it prevents you from seeing things. Because perception is not just dependent on the senses, it's dependent on our interpretation of things according to how the intelligence processes information. And if the intelligence is affected by envy or lust, it becomes prejudicial in how it interprets information. And therefore, let's say Prabhupada was walking down the streets of New York and there was a firm atheist. Then what would he see? Would he be seeing Prabhupada? He would be seeing him in one sense, but would he be seeing Prabhupada? Because he would be seeing something that's not very exalted. He would be seeing a person who's an illusion, you know, a person who's deluding others, a person who's dishonest, so many things. So would they be seeing? And I remember once, when I was inviting people to Prabhupada's disappearance festival, and I had some service to invite senior Vaishnavas, and one senior Vaishnava was very humble, and he said, "What will I say?" I said, "Excuse me, Maharaj, you were with Prabhupada. This Prabhupada stayed with this person for some time." And he said, "You saw Prabhupada." He said, "I did not see Prabhupada. If I saw Prabhupada, would I be so casual? Would I be so casual? Would I be so casual in seeing Prabhupada?" So just like you're before the deities in the temple, he told me. And you're talking with your friend. Are you seeing Krishna? So obviously, Queen Kunti's making the point. Very nice, just like an actor. And the range. So what stops him from being recognized, although everywhere? Well, then he's God. And Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is very beautiful. Prabhupada, why cannot be seen? And the Prabhupada, with his face, he performs so many wonderful activities in Vrindavan. That lifted Govardhan Hill, so many powerful things. And he's affirmed by all authorities. And Prabhupada mentions Vyas, Devala, Asita, Narada, Madhva, Shankara, Ramaj, Chaitanya, Jiva, Vishwanath, Bhakti, all authorities. So people can't understand why. I don't know if we'll have time, but Prabhupada gives different reasons. He said, this is why people don't understand. And you can try to think yourselves what each means. He said, there's a class of men with the demoniac mentality who are always reluctant to accept the Lord as the supreme absolute truth. Okay, this is the reason. One, partially due to a poor fund of knowledge. They have no understanding about this. And then partially due to stubborn obstinacy. It's a poor fund of knowledge. Obstinacy results from various misdeeds in the past and present. So there's a certain sukriti that gives you the faith and an ability to understand Krishna. Another difficulty, he said, is people depend more on imperfect senses, that you can't understand him by the wrong process. And then Prabhupada describes that. All our senses are imperfect. We claim to observe everything and anything, but we must admit that we can observe things under certain material conditions only, which are beyond our control. I remember Sahotra gave an example, a very nice example. He said, if there's fine grains of white and gray particles, and you mix them together, it will look gray. But it's not actually gray, it's white and black. And if you look under a microscope, you'll see that there's actually white and black or not gray. So so our perception is limited by certain conditions. We can observe things even materially. We must admit, under certain material conditions. So if there's certain conditions to observe matter, then what about what about to observe spirit? Kunti accepts this deficiency of the conditioned soul. And therefore, the last part of the purport, Prabhupada explains mercy of God in appearing in terms of the deity, which is a very, very interesting phenomena, the deity. It's matter transformed into spirit. And the example that's often given is the one force or energy called electricity can be hot or cold. So it's the force of God, his energy. It can manifest as matter, it can manifest spirit. It's all God's energy. And therefore the matter, which is the spirit of God's energy, can be transformed into spirit by a particular process that invokes the will of God to come within the deity form. So that particular form, is accessible for people. For people who are not so qualified, but the interesting thing also about the deity, as we see in our tradition, every great person is a deity. So it's not just for the less intelligent, so to speak. It's a way that Krishna manifests that's accessible to our service. By doing that service is not just a physical thing, it's an expression of the heart. So I'd like to really cover more, but it's already time, and I did prepare more verses. Very, very beautiful. Kunti and her humility. So I'm less intelligent. Women are not philosophers or something like that. It's not our nature. How can we know? Very humble, she's saying. In one sense, how can we understand you? How can we understand you? And it's interesting how insightful she is. How insightful she is. And how can we understand you? Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya Cha Nanda Gopa Kumara Govinda
Kumara
Govindaya Namo Namah. How can we understand you? Well, who understands you? People who have relationship to you. People who are sincere and humble. Then you manifest your relationship with them. You manifest your full self, your full being to them. Okay, we'll stop there. Are there any questions? Who's that singing? That's very beautiful. Who's that?
I'm sorry. I thought I had muted the phone.
Oh, Amiya, very good.
Sorry. I thought for sure I had muted the phone.
No, you didn't. We're listening to your nice singing. That's very nice. Thank you. Chant
one
that verse.
One of my favorites.
Thank you. Thank you. We didn't know Amiya. Now we know. she doesn't usually reveal that side so easily. Very
good.
I recognize
her voice.
Okay. Who's that?
This is Gail. Oh, Gail.
Yeah.
His voice.
Okay. Very nice. Wasn't that sweet, Gail? Very nice. Good. Good. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Nanda. Please accept.
Nanda, Hare go. Thank you.
Maharaj, can I ask you a short question?
Okay, short one.
Previously on Sunday, you mentioned that Parikshit Maharaj could have thwarted this Brahman's curse, but he didn't do, and he mentioned three things. Could you repeat them, or you can, because I forgot that.
It comes in later thing. I remember one of the things was he wanted to be purified of any simple reaction that he may have taken.
Okay.
That was one of them. Two, if you make a mistake, then the mistake is carried by the ancestors. Like, for example... Oh. The in America, the Hatfields and McCoys, you know, they feuded for years, you know, because, and if you, or for example, you know, the father leaves debt and the son has to accrue the debt.
Yes.
So he wanted to counteract the past simple reactions. He wanted to, he didn't want the debt to be accrued to the family. There's one other reason which I didn't mention because I didn't remember. But maybe I'll look it up. I can.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Anastasia.
Thank you for coming on, Anastasia.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Where are you all?
Who's that?
Yes.
Who's it?
Kana.
Who's it?
Kana.
Kana?
Yes.
Is that Kana? Nitya's son? Kana, so nice to hear from you. Thank you for listening to the... haven't heard from you in a while, but I know you always like stories of Mahabharata. Thank you for coming on, Tana. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good. Anybody else like to come on?
This is Henry Maharaj.
Henry, how are you?
How are you? Hi.
Very nice. Thank you. Good. It gives me a nice sense of the people. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay.
Satisfied
with that answer?
Yeah, that was really helpful. I think it cleared up a lot of the points.
Yeah, it was
new ones too. But
what's that?
some new ones too, but I think the main point that we discussed, it really was helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a very, it's just nice, actually, as Prabhupada said, discussing the Shastra from different angles. It's nice. Okay, we will end now, and I will go to the next place. Gopemanandi Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindhu Payedrasha Patitanam Pavane Vilvishadevi.